Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe. We've done something a little different tonight. We've taken on a new member to our motley crew, a man by the name of Paul Wilson. He's a traditional martial artist as well, and he's had quite a distinguished background. He's been all over, and he talks about taking his martial art with him where he goes, which is an interesting topic in itself, and also. He has his own opinions. His style is a little bit different than Gene's and mine, and so he has a little bit of a different perspective on the arts, and we think it makes for an interesting conversation. Tonight is part one of a two-parter. We begin by talking to Paul about how he started karate and where it's taken him, and his beliefs about it. And part two next week, we'll get into a little bit more of our regular topics, talking about something that is of general interest to everybody. So here's episode one of podcast 25, and next week podcast 26 will be a continuation of our conversation with Paul. So we hope you enjoy. Thank you very much.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Karate Cafe's podcast. This is episode 25, I think, if I've counted right. Today is Wednesday, May 31st, 2006. I'm Gene Myers, a student of Shorinru Karate and Two Circle Jiu-Jitsu. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime here, Sensei Pete Shambo. Hey, Peter.
Hey, Gene. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. We're trying to keep this... you and I aren't far from each other, and we're both hearing the thunderstorm behind us. So... hopefully this will work tonight, and the thunderstorm will stay away during the podcast.
Yeah, no such luck usually, but we have a special guest tonight that we're pretty excited about, somebody who's been posting on our forum and has had some good thoughts, and that's Paul Wilson. Paul is a Sandan in Shorinru Kenshin Kan Karate. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and... this is very interesting. It's not often that we've had, well, I don't think, have we ever had somebody from outside of our own Shorinru style, Pete, to talk to us on the podcast?
No, we haven't. And, we've always said we want other traditional, well, other martial artists to join us. And finally, Paul stepped up.
I'll try and do you guys proud.
Well, the fact that you showed up is... You know, we're very impressed by that. Tell us a little bit about Shorinru Kenshin Kan Karate.
Well, it's Shorinru style, obviously. It's our leader is Master Fusei Kisei in Okinawa, and his son Isao Kisei. Isao, the eighth dan now, I believe. We're a traditional style. In Okinawa, they also teach a sport variation. They go to a lot of tournaments. Matter of fact, there was just some postings on our website about a big tournament they went to in Okinawa. We've got schools all over the United States. We've got them in Texas. We have them in all up and down the seaboard, New Hampshire. We've got them in San Diego, Minnesota. Let's see, it's a karate kobudo style, much like your guys' style, so we have many of the same kata. It's a really fantastic self-defense style, and I've been doing it since 1987, so that's almost 20 years now.
Wow. That's a long time. Do you own your own school, Paul?
I know. I just moved to Dallas. I'm in Dallas, Texas. I just moved here, and we actually just bought a house, and I moved to a new section of Dallas. So I'm actually polling for students right now. I've got a couple people interested, and we have two other black belts here in the area that we try and get together and work out with until we can actually found the school. And before that, when I was in Arkansas, I was going to University of Arkansas, and I was teaching there.
Okay.
Excellent. Have you ever trained in Okinawa?
No, I've never been lucky enough. My instructor, Don Foster, went last year, and I really wanted to go, but that's when I elected to go back to school. So I was pretty dirt broke, and I couldn't go. I did see it once when I was in the Navy. I was on a submarine, and we surfaced to pick some people up and get some food and whatnot, and I saw the beach. But no, I haven't been lucky enough to go. Several members of our Association of Gan and go every year. One of our black belts, one of our senior black belts, one of our regional directors, Greg Lazarus in New Hampshire, he goes every year. And pretty much a good-sized contingent from the United States tries to go once a year. And Master Kisei does come every year for a series of camps.
Oh, really? So you get to train with Master Kisei here in the States?
Oh, yes, I do. Matter of fact, the my Nidan and my Sandan I've received from him. My Sandan I actually received here in Texas, in Athens, Texas, and my Nidan I received in Arkansas at a camp there. But he comes every year. I think the second or third class I attended when I first started, he actually was coming through, and I didn't understand what was going on, and he actually helped me tie my first belt.
Oh, boy. That's something you can always remember. Now, you said he does a series of camps, so he does them in different locations in the U.S.?
Yes, he'll do one. He'll generally do one maybe in the West Coast. He'll try and do one in the center, and then he'll do some on the East Coast, usually up in New Hampshire. It's usually the regional directors that will set it up. We have one of our regional directors in Colorado who takes care of the West Coast, one here in Texas, which kind of takes care of the middle portion, and then one on the East Coast. Each regional director will try and set one up in his region. And then he also goes down to Argentina. We've got schools in Australia, too. He's gone down there. He went to Argentina, I think, last year. So he gets around.
Well, he sounds like a very busy man.
Yeah, he is a pretty busy guy. He's got a lot of dojo in Okinawa on the various military bases.
And this is from the Matsumura lineage, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, he trained with Hōhan Sōken. You know, he taught when, I guess when Master Kisei first took it up, it was called Matsumura Seito, Matsumura Orthodox. And he trained under him. He, I believe, started under Shirenjiru, Master Kisei did, and then switched over.
I was just going to ask, with tracing your lineage to Hōhan Sōken, are you familiar at all with any of the Hakutsuru, with the White Crane, the Hakutsuru Kenpo style?
Oh, yes. Master Kisei shows Hakutsuru every now and again, and as I've moved along, I've read a few articles by some people who have been in our style and aren't really associated with it anymore, and they try and play Hakutsuru as being some sort of mysterious component that's not, you know, that you learn later. And I think that it is more of a series of techniques that you refine later, but I see Crane throughout all our kata. And I didn't really see it until after Shodan, when I really started kind of refining kata, and you see it in even lower kata, in the Pinan kata, in the Ananku, and Seisan. You see Crane throughout if you just look for it. And it's really one of the linchpins, the foundations of our branch of Shōnryū, for sure. And generally, he will show, when he comes for his camp, he'll give a little demonstration, and he'll kind of show, and he'll say, oh, Crane, Hakutsuru here. And that's then just let you know where it is, and it pops up all over the place.
Yeah, we've noticed the same thing, too. We're doing some White Crane, and it's amazing how... When you see it, when you know what White Crane is, and then you can really, you see it everywhere. It's just amazing.
Yeah, once you start looking, you'll find it. And my own personal opinion is I see it a lot. Whenever you see a change body move, there's Crane in there. Generally, the block or the strike after that, it's Crane. That's Hakutsuru.
By change body, you mean you're talking about Tai Sabaki, your body shifting. Is that correct?
Yeah, we kind of call it change body for cheating.
You have quite a list of Ippon Kumite drills.
Yeah.
Are they? I'm looking at your website now, Paul, or the Kenshikan site under the training. This is a great website. If you have, any of our listeners have an opportunity, please check out the site. I'll give a plug, and hopefully we'll do one at the end. It's www.kenshinkan.com. That's K-E-N-S-H-I-N-K-A-N.com. And It's a well developed site. I'm on the Ippon Kumite section, and man, it looks like you have. I can see for white and green belts. Do you have any Ippon Kumite drills for higher ranks?
Oh yes, yeah. If you'll notice, the Ippon Kumite all seems to build on one another.
Yes.
It all starts, you know, just basic block, and then block and punch, and then, you know, block punch same time, and then the brown belt and black belt adds, you know, kicks and more focused strikes and pressure point strikes. So pretty much everything in our system tends to build on it, especially up through the Q ranks. That's why I think when I first started this style, I had several friends who, you know, they were Taekwondo stylists, they were Goju stylists, and they would come and they'd come to a couple classes and they're like, well, there's not enough kicks, or there's not, you know, but we really stress basics, you know, and we really stress fundamentals. So everything, but everything builds on it, and if people won't stick around long enough to see that, then they're kind of missing the picture, I think. So.
Yeah, I think that's the story of a lot of traditional martial arts is people don't see the flash. We have some dojos around us that kind of cater to people that want to see the kicks and the jumping kicks and whatnot, and they seem to be attracting people.
Well, I think that those styles, particularly the Korean arts, they're attractive to a younger crowd because physically they're the ones who are able to do these jumping, spinning, flying kicks. Whereas we older fellas, you know, present company excluded, of course, you know, that's not really, not only is it physically more difficult for us to do, but in street self-defense, it's probably impractical, you know. So in Kenshin Khan, Paul, what would a typical class for, say, you know, at brown belt, black belt level be like?
Well, usually, on up until when I got my Shodan, everyone pretty much trained together. We were very small schools. We trained in a lot of churches, a lot of you know, rec centers, that sort of thing like that. So everyone worked out, you know, and you started out at white belt, and the whole black belts got in line, and one person led class. And so generally the way it would work is we'd get in, we'd warm up, just do some of the basic stretches, some of them are on the website, and some other ones we do partner stretches, and kind of get going. Then we do our 25 basics, which I think are on the website. We do our 25 basic techniques. Then we would generally line up and do Kotiate, which is, you know, the body toughening, and we do Ippon Kumite. And then when it came to doing kata, that's when we just kind of start breaking up. Ippon Kumite, we'd obviously break up too into ranks. And then we try and get through our kata, and then whenever you got to the end of a number of kata, you knew, you would break off and go to the back and work on your kata, or they would branch you off, and maybe we'd work on some bunkai or various things like that, and then maybe, you know, just a little kumite after that.
So a typical class would run maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours?
Yeah, right around there. And then, you know, generally people would stick around afterwards and work out. When I first started, I lived like 5 minutes from our dojo, so I would stay until they kicked me out, essentially.
Yeah.
But that was a pretty good stance. Now, a lot of our classes now are larger, but essentially the core of every class of Kenshin Khan I've ever been in has always started out, do some light warm-ups. Everyone does the 25 basics. And then we move on from there. So.
Now, we've discussed earlier, Paul, you and I, before the podcast, that you've been and lived in several different areas. Now, have you studied the same style in each area, or?
Pretty much. If I haven't studied it, I've at least trained with it. But I've also cross trained with a few other arts just to see, because I personally, yes, I think my style is a pretty complete art. But there's something to learn everywhere. You know, some people focus on certain things and have a different take on it, and it's fun just to work out. So, but I with Shōen Ryu with Kenshin Khan, I've worked out, when I joined the Navy, I worked out in San Diego. We had a school out there, and I met a lot of good people out there. I've trained in Hawaii with some of our black belts that came out there to visit, and also with one that was living there. I trained in New Hampshire. I've trained in Arizona. I've trained in New Mexico, here in Texas, in Dallas, and in Athens. I've trained in Germany with martial artists in Germany. We exchanged techniques there. I've trained in Italy and Sicily and Taiwan, Hong Kong. I tried doing some Tai Chi in Hong Kong after I learned Tai Chi. That was kind of an eye-opener.
Wow.
But yeah, I've had the opportunity to go there, and I think that the martial arts have given me an opportunity to appreciate the culture, Asian culture in general, I guess, more so than someone who's just, you know, going somewhere on vacation or stopping in.
Well, as somebody who's been around the world, obviously, I've always found it interesting that you can talk to somebody. If I can be in a strange or a new part of Central New York or the East Coast, and if somebody else takes martial art, there's almost a language you have in common. Do you find that? I mean, you find that with language barrier? Is there less of a barrier when you're talking to another martial artist?
No, yeah, I think it's kind of just a linchpin of things that you can talk about. The one, I used to work for a robotics company, and that's how I ended up in Italy and Germany. And in Italy, one of our programmers was a Shotokan and Aikido stylist, and he spoke fairly good English, but he was half Iraqi and half German, so he spoke like three other languages. He was his English was pretty good, but you know, idioms and stuff he didn't have. And, you know, we eventually would run out of things to talk about. You know, at work, we were like, how's the equipment working? But somehow it came out that we both did martial arts. I don't know if I was working out one day and he saw me or what. But then we had a whole new thing to talk about. And we ended up talking about it quite a bit. And when we were doing unit tests on equipment and stuff like that, you have a lot of time. And we ended up chatting a lot about martial arts. And we would go, you know, back to the hotel room and we'd flip the hotel beds up against the wall, and he would show me some Aikido techniques. I'd show him some shoulders and joint locks and stuff, and we just had a whole new appreciation for one another at that point.
We're fortunate where we train to have a gentleman who's like yourself, a Sandan in Shorinru, but he's also a Sandan in Goju-ryu and in two-circle jiu-jitsu, which is a derivative of Wally J's small-circle jiu-jitsu. And he's helped us to see where joint locks and throws and nerve strikes, where you can see those techniques right in our Shorin Rukatas. You know, I mean, it's definitely helped me to have a different interpretation on kata that I wasn't quite getting before, and I found personally that it's the perfect supplement to Shorin Ryu. I don't know, Aikijitsu too is a vicious sport, but can you see any of the techniques, Aikijitsu techniques, in your Shorin Ryu Kenshin Kan katas?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of grappling. I mean, when we do our bunkai, it is almost exclusively, it seems to be comprised of joint locks and throws and change body techniques. I don't really see, I think the strikes and the kicks are the obvious techniques,
right.
And I don't think they're the subtleties of the art, of the technique. I don't think that it's just, you know, okay, he blocked and kicked. You know, I think there's a lot of it where you can see there's traps. There's obvious traps. And then I think you can see through the result of the movement, like progressing to the next step, that there's, you know, a trap and a takedown. You know, the Nahanji kata, to me, I mean, they're all about grappling. It looks a lot of, like, it's a lot of striking, but I think it's a ton of grappling.
Yeah. Now, when you say grappling, okay, you don't necessarily mean going right to the mat. I mean, grappling can be standing up, too. Is that correct?
No, yeah, standing joint locks. And, I think the takedowns are kind of implied. Yeah, but generally in the bunkai, we'll do more standing grappling or, you know, joint locks. And and whatnot, and then it will progress to the ground. You know, it's like, okay, this is a further progression to, of that technique. But and I don't think that's really part of the kata. I think that's kind of left up to the interpretation of whoever's doing it.
When you talk about bunkai, Paul, do you have like a set bunkai drill, set interpretations, like practical applications or practical analyses of a specific kata, or is it just open to everyone's interpretation and you develop that from there?
Well, that's actually kind of an interesting question, because a couple weeks ago on our Kenshin Kan board, we were talking about some things, and one of our senior belts, and I think in Australia, had said something about a shoner stylist from another style having wrong bunkai, and to me, I was going, how can you have wrong bunkai? It's kind of open. It's kind of, you know, but I found out, and I didn't know this, that apparently there are set bunkai techniques that they kind of teach in Okinawa, that Kisei Hanshi has taught people, and I mean, I have personally have never seen them. I may have seen them, but I haven't known that they were part of a direct set. With and all my learning, it's always been pretty much, you know, here's the kata, what do you think that technique is? And I think that that's probably more the way it should be. I think that if you have just the set, it's going to kind of limit people in. I don't think a lot of people are going to try and look any deeper into it, really. Unless they, I mean, they really, really want to, of course. But
you sound like someone who's actually gone out searching for, you know, bunkai, whether it's talking to other martial artists or doing some research through various media, you know, to better understand bunkai of kata. Is that right?
Kind of, sort of. I kind of got an object lesson. You reminded me when you were talking about the student who was also a jiu-jitsu student. I was training in New Mexico at a shorinry school there that wasn't one of our schools. It was just a sort of generic shorinry school. And one of the students there was, I think, a second-degree black belt in judo and a first in aikido, and he was kind of one of those on the, this was back in the mid-90s, and it was before mixed martial arts really became on the front, but that's what kind of where he was going with it. And one day I was doing a kata, and he said, what is that? And I was it's a paisai kata. And I said, well, I think it's, you know, this. He goes, oh yeah, try it on me. And he threw a punch, and I did it, and I was on the ground in like 2 seconds. And, you know, and he choked off one of my arteries. He said, you got 10 seconds to be awake. Make it work. And which I couldn't. He had me down, and I was like, wow. And he goes, you know, do you know what that technique is? And I'm like, well, I know what it's supposed to be. He goes, well, did it work? And I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, then maybe something was wrong with your technique. And yeah. I don't think he was degrading the technique. I think he was degrading my application of it in my head. And I think he was right. And later in life, the more I think about it, the more right he was. He wasn't saying that the way I was thought my hands were supposed to be or whatever was incorrect. I think he just was saying the application of it that I was doing obviously didn't work. And since that, I've always been kind of sensitive on even in my kata, just a technique, it has to kind of look like it's going to work to me. Otherwise, I kind of abandon it. And I try and put in some sort of technique that's like it, that looks like it's going to work or feels like it's going to work to me.
You want to hear kind of a funny story?
Sure.
Always.
Well, I don't know how funny it is, but it kind of, I thought it was funny, but it cost me some money. We have a camp twice a year, and our winter camp is in West Paterson, New Jersey, in February. And I was testing for a fourth dan this past February, and Kyoshi Hurton, who's a ninth dan, informed myself and my instructor, Tony Musso, who was testing for his fifth dan, that we had to provide a whole brand new interpretation, bunkai interpretation of a kata, you know. Had to be something from Pasai Sho or higher. So, you know, we got on the internet and we checked through books and magazines, and anyway, we found an Okinawan master, a 10th Dan in Shorin Ryu, okay, who was selling DVDs of these secret bunkai applications for katas that, you know, had the same name as katas in our system. So we thought, well, this is sweet, you know. So we ordered the two DVD set. Cost us, I think, $50, and all it was punch kick stuff. So when you were talking about, you know, interpreting a kata as, you know, maybe a punch kick, you know, it could be something more. But here's a tenth Dan willing to sell these what was advertised as these deep secrets, and it was nothing more than something that like a beginner and intermediate student would interpret a kata as, you know, the bunkai for it. Boy, was I pissed.
But he had the accent.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I guess my point is that, you know, even when you go out looking for these things, you know, and particularly, you know, if you're paying money for it, and I thought, you know, geez, this is going to make my job easy. All I got to do is pay $50, and I can go down and say, oh, here's my interpretation of Chinto, you know, and it would look like crap, you know, and you know, Kyo should be looking at me and saying, what the hell is this? So, anyway, to make a long story short, it's you got to be very careful about how people interpret stuff. I think he knew a lot more, obviously, than he was selling. But, you know, to idiots like me, you know, what do we know?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of people who have accused Okinawa Masters of kind of doing that stuff, of holding back the good stuff. And I can neither confirm nor deny that, because I don't really think that much has been held back. I think stuff is taught kind of when it's, you know, it's ready, you're ready for it. But, you know, I also think there's probably people that, yeah, are just, you know, hey, I'll crank out a DVD, or probably one of the senior students said, like, hey, we'll crank out this DVD, we'll make some money for the school.
You know, well, they got my money.
Yeah.
How much of an emphasis do you place on kata in your training?
Quite a bit. I usually, when I'm just working out by myself, I really don't do our 25 basic techniques. I'll just do, well, we have black belt basic techniques that we do, which is a little more advanced version of that, and there's only 13 of them. I'll generally do that to warm up if I've got the time, but if I don't have the time, I'll just go through empty-hand kata. From what I've read, Master Soken said, everything's in the kata. You know, everything you need is in the kata. And I tend to agree with that. I think the rubber meets the road, and people don't want to look farther into it than what it is. And so there are a lot of people will say, like, well, you can't learn to fight from kata. I'm like, and I think you can. I think you just have to look for it.
Exactly. And, Peter, where have you heard that saying before? It's all in the kata.
Well, I've heard it in the great eastern city of Paterson, New Jersey.
Yeah. You know, they came up with a new motto for the state of New Jersey. I forget what it is, but I thought it was going to be "It's all in the kata," because that's all you heard when you went to New Jersey. Interesting. How did you get started, Paul, in the martial arts? I mean, have you always, you know, been a student? Have you always, you know, even informally? Or
No. It sounds like we're going through every podcast we've ever done.
We got to get you while you're here, you know.
Well, you're going to be part of the crew, so we want people to know who you are.
Okay, who you are? I actually emailed this to somebody, a guy who was talking about classes the other day. When I was about 4 or 5, my father took me to a judo class, and I saw one kid get thrown, and it was really hard. And the kid, you know, grunted. It was a kiai, or you know, I didn't know what it was at the time, but it scared the crap out of me, and I ran out of the place. And you couldn't get me near a martial art. And then when I was in high school, 1986, 87, a friend of mine, who was really actually kind of a portly, unassuming-looking guy, that was actually a first Q in Jornu. And I don't know, somehow we were talking about something, and he was like, you know, don't try and hit me, I'll take you out. And I said, oh, yeah. And he's like, I know karate. I'm like, okay, whatever. Because, like I say, he didn't look like a karate guy. And anyway, we just kind of started talking about it, and I think the next day or so later, he said, well, you know, we got a class tonight, and it's blah, and like I say, it was just down the street from my house. So I thought I'd come by and check it out. And I walked down there, and they were teaching in a rec room of a church that was down the street from my house, and one of our head instructor was there, who had left. He had moved to Colorado, and he was back for whatever reason, who was an awesome martial artist, and the class just looked great. Everybody was friendly. It was a great workout, you know. People, when we got done with our workouts, our gis were soaked, you know, and we had the air conditioner on. In Arkansas in summer, it's really hot, but, I mean, people were working out. And something about it clicked on me. So I went to a couple more classes, and I went to a class and worked out. I picked up things pretty easily, so I decided to join. And then the thing that cemented it, I guess, in my mind was, then that week was when Master Kisei came. And like I say, he walked in the door, and Gene, if you look on the website, you look at him, and first thing I thought was like, holy crap, that's Mr. Miyagi.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's Mr. Miyagi right there. And with all due respect to Kisei Hanshi, that's, you know. I was actually trying to tie the belt on my gi that I had just bought that afternoon and washed. And I was back there in the changing room trying to change it. And, you know, I'd seen how everyone had treated him, you know, with so much respect, and everyone was all, you know, be on your best behavior, Kisei's coming, you know, trying to drill me, who had just started, in all the formalities and blah, blah, blah. So, and I'm in there trying to tie my belt, and the door opens, and I look up, and, you know, there he is. He came in to change out. And, you know, I jumped up, and all I knew how to say was hi and bow. So that's all I did. And he smiled, and he said, oh, new belt, huh? And I said, hi, sensei. And so he came over and tied it for me. So I was like, okay. And then he's like, oh, you know, go out and warm up. So I went out and warmed up, and then he came back out and we did our class, and I was like, well, that's it, you know. When the highest guy in the association can take the time to tie a white belt, you know, I think it's a good thing. So
it's yeah, that's interesting. He seemed like, just like we tend to put our masters, if you will, on a pedestal and think of them as something more than human, but actually they're just regular people.
Exactly. And he's a really, really nice guy. I mean, the last time he was down here in Texas, I went down with my instructor, and we got there the day early, and I actually hadn't seen him since 1996, so I was kind of, you know, nervous about it. And he came in there, and we were sitting in the back, and he's like, oh, come sit, and we watched TV, and we watched a Jackie Chan movie, and he was smiling and laughing and, you know, having a good time. Don't get me wrong, there's times when he's not really happy with what we're doing, and you can definitely get that vibe of there's an unhappy karate master standing next to you. But overall, he's a very giving guy. I mean, just a really good instructor, and he can do more crunches than any human I've ever seen, and he's like 75.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He led all last weekend of the last camp I went to. We started out, and my instructor held his feet while we did the crunches, and he would crank them out, and we did at least 500 every beginning of every session, and he did every one of them.
Wow.
Wow.
And the rest of us were dying.
So that's part one of our two-part conversation with Paul Wilson, the new member of our crew. We'll be back again next week. We'll get into a little bit more general topics and continue the conversation next week. We'll see you then.